one of the mistakes I think parents sometimes make from an early point is sort of shielding their children almost from any kind of objections or questions around faith. And even perhaps when they themselves raise questions, sort of pushing those down as though we shouldn't really be questioning our faith. I think that's a huge mistake.
Welcome to Family Life Today, where we want to help you pursue the relationships that matter most. I'm Dave Wilson.
And I'm Ann Wilson. You can find us at familylifetoday.com. This is Family Life Today.
Well, we've got Justin Brierley, who's such an intelligent thinker, talking about why I'm still a Christian. This is going to be a good conversation.
We're going to have several days with Justin, and you're going to love this. And I feel like he's the perfect person to walk through all of these questions.
Yeah, I mean, the subtitle of his book is what he's done for generations after two decades. This is the subtitle. After two decades of conversations with skeptics and atheists, the reason I believe. So if anybody has a reason not to believe, it's this guy. He still believes. We're going to find out why. And this is going to help you. And it's also going to help you as a parent raise your kids. You're one of the smartest, most intelligent, brightest thinkers I know. And I'm not trying to butter you up.
Justin, he's not saying that about me. He's saying this about you.
Anne's bright, but she's also pretty.
My cheeks are burning because that is a very kind thing to say, but it's not entirely true. I'm glad I give that impression. That's very kind.
Well, no, seriously, you're a very good thinker. And the question I had growing up that I still think people ask is, how can somebody as intelligent as you call themselves a Christian? That's the question. Your book is Why I'm Still a Christian. Tell me why you're a Christian, because you're a thinking man. And often we think if you have a brain, I remember Josh McDowell saying back in the day, you know, a lot of people think Christians have two brains. One's lost and the other's out looking for it, right? That's what a lot of people think, but you're very intelligent and you're a Christian. How is that possible?
Well, I would say it's simply possible because being a Christian and being an intelligent, sane, rational person are not at all mutually exclusive and never have been. It's only a relatively recent idea that to be a Christian, to be a person of faith, means that you have to throw your brain in the trash can. Sadly, it's a myth that's been perpetuated, especially in recent decades, by what you might call the New Atheist movement, which was this very dogmatic, anti-religious atheist movement that tried to paint people of faith as idiots, faith heads, delusional, as Richard Dawkins called it. So it's not surprising that that stereotype has been around. Now, admittedly, there are obviously some Christians who perhaps fit that stereotype, sadly. Yeah. But having said that, I meet people of all faiths and no faith who are equally, can be of varying levels of intelligence. So the reality is, you know, there's nothing particularly more special or less special about Christians when it comes to intelligence. All I would say is that, in fact, the history of Christianity is filled with incredibly intelligent people who took their faith very seriously, but also took their areas of study, be it, you know, astronomy, mathematics, physics, or any other area of expertise, including theology, very seriously, and never saw some kind of disjunct between believing in God and being a Christian and being intelligent. So it's a shame that that idea has come into public circulation in recent years, but there's really no warrant for it historically, certainly.
Now, is your journey to faith a long one? I mean, give us a little history. Was it a thinking journey, a feeling journey, all the above?
That's a good question, because your book is called Why I'm Still a Christian, After Two Decades of Conversations with Skeptics and Atheists, The Reason I Believe. So take us back to the beginning.
Well, for me, it's definitely been both a feeling and thinking journey. I suppose I was raised in a church stream that was more on the feeling end, if you like. It was into a sort of an experiential form of Christianity. So I was raised sort of expecting to feel God move and to see God sort of in the lives of people in a very kind of direct experiential way, which I'm very grateful for, because I do believe, obviously, that God acts in those ways and that we can have genuine experiences, emotional, spiritual experiences of God. So my own conversion at around the age of 15, having always been brought up in the faith and God gone to church with my parents, but it really became my own around the age of 15 when I had an encounter with God. It was, as I'm sure is the case for many people who were brought up in church, it was through the ministry of a wise youth pastor. It was specifically on a weekend away for our youth that I just really sensed that God was there for me. And from that moment on, the lights kind of came on and I was just absolutely invested in, you know, this search for God, in praying, in trying to understand the Bible, in wanting to live my life for Christ. So that was the beginning for me. I'd say it was very much a sort of wham, bam moment, actually, in my case. You talk to my wife, she's got a very different story of growing into faith over a period of many years. She could never put a specific date on it. Whereas I would say I do have one of those moments where things came alive for me. But having had that, if you like, experience, that spiritual, emotional experience, I did find my intellect having to sort of catch up in the years thereafter because I became a very devout Christian. But as soon as I went to university, especially, and I went to Oxford University, so it's a place where there's a strong Christian presence, but there's also a lot of skepticism, a lot of atheists around. I soon had my beliefs questioned and raked over and encountered a lot of objections to Christianity. And that was really when I had to really do the hardest work of starting to look into the intellectual arguments for faith. And to my, not surprise, but at least to my great pleasure, I found that actually, as well as being something you can experience with your heart, Christianity is also made for the mind, that there are brilliant Christian thinkers who have answered all of the objections that people have leveled over the years. And so I was able to discover wonderful thinkers like G.K. Chesterton, C.S. Lewis, and many others who obviously are known for the way in which they've enabled Christians to think rationally and to defend their faith from an intellectual position. So that was the journey for me, an experience that then my intellectual side had to catch up with as well.
Hey, and real quick, I just want to remind you, our listener, that this is a special time of year to give to Family Life because every single gift is being matched through the end of the year. Did you hear that? That means your support goes twice as far to share God's hope with families everywhere. So don't miss the opportunity to double your impact today. If you want to give, just visit familylifetoday.com or give us a call at 1-800-FL-TODAY. That's F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. Okay, let's get back to our conversation. As you talk to a lot of people, I mean, you have the show where you really debate and, you know, have conversations with skeptics and atheists. Is your journey pretty common? Because my journey mimics yours. I didn't go to Oxford. I went to the Oxford of the United States called Ball State University. I'm kidding. But, you know, I sort of had an encounter with Christ in college, even though I grew up in church. I had an encounter, you know, and I start getting involved in ministry. And then Ann and I commit as we get married to go into full-time vocational Christian ministry. Now I'm on another college campus, basically going to the campus every day, sharing the gospel and sharing Jesus. And I come home one day, I don't think we were married 5-6 months. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what have we done with our lives? How do we know this is even true? I mean, I was at a crisis of faith intellectually, like, okay, I had this decision is this emotional journey, but now I've got my brain engaged and I never really did the backstory research. So I'm questioning everything. And I remember Ann looked at me and said, you better figure this out for the both of us.
I would say your story is not uncommon in that sense, Dave, because I've met so many Christians for whom, certainly like me, like you, they've kind of gone on that more intellectual journey, maybe even years into the beginnings of their Christian walk. And it might be a particular set of circumstances that lead to that. It might be suddenly being exposed to difficult arguments and objections. It may be kind of being around a new crowd, moving city, whatever it is. You know, for many, you know, young Christians, it's simply leaving the family home and the kind of the Christian bubble, if you will, sometimes, and being exposed to a more sort of secular, questioning kind of environment at university or work situations. So yeah, I've met many people for whom that's been the case. The good news is that the most frequent thing I find is that Christians who are on that journey find that there are good answers to the kinds of questions they're asking. Now, having said that, I think a lot of Christians have to kind of come to terms with some of the difficulties that they will inevitably find in scripture or perhaps in what they've been taught about science and faith. And there may be a kind of a difficult, often uncomfortable period where they're wrestling with these things and having to put the pieces together and even having to question some of the assumptions they were maybe raised with or taught with in order to kind of accommodate new information. So it's not necessarily an easy journey by any means. But as I say, in the majority of cases, I find people manage it, people do it and actually come out with much stronger faith actually in the end than what they had. On the converse though, I do find people, and especially in those conversations I've had over the years with atheists and Christians on my shows, many people who actually kind of do the opposite. They haven't had the experience, but their approach in Christianity kind of at a more intellectual level, it's the intellectual questions that are starting to open up the possibility that there might be a God, starting to open up the possibility that there may be a need for Christianity to make sense of life. That's interesting because it goes to show that not everyone sort of has the experience followed by kind of the intellectual kind of search. Sometimes the intellectual search absolutely precedes the experience. And that would be the case of someone I've mentioned, C.S. Lewis, one of the greatest Christian thinkers of the 20th century, for whom he went on a long sort of intellectual sort of search as an atheist before becoming a Christian. And it was really at one level, it was his intellectual eyes being opened to the truth of Christianity that brought him to faith. And later, there were experiences that helped to confirm that. But it was really an intellectual journey first and foremost. So it does depend on the person, you know, and not everyone's going to have the same journey.
Yeah, I mean, for my journey way back, I mean, this is 40-some years ago, Mere Christianity was pivotal. Mm. You know, reading his journey and his thinking was very helpful. And I wouldn't have said this at the time, but I had an experience and it was real. I mean, I had real faith. And then several years later, I'm sort of piecing together the intellectual side of what I believe. And today, what I experienced could be called, maybe not, deconstruction.
Mm.
I'd love your thoughts on that, because in some ways I deconstructed and rebuilt from the ground up, and it ended up in a very good way. And often you hear that word and you're like, oh, that's a bad, bad thing. People are going to walk away. And that can happen, but sometimes it's like, it's healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, I've included a whole chapter in this book on the concept of deconstruction, because it's been something of a buzzword over the last 5 to 10 years, hasn't it? And I met in the course of my career hosting these conversations between Christians and non-Christians, many people who are somewhere on that journey of deconstruction, people who are perhaps questioning the faith they were raised with or have rejected it entirely in some instances. And I suppose like you, I think there are perhaps two different types of deconstruction. There's a healthy one and there's maybe a more unhealthy one. I think the healthy one is where, you know, we go on a critical sort of inquisitive, curious sort of journey, looking perhaps at some of the assumptions we've had, but never merely questioned growing up and that sort of thing. And that can actually be a very healthy thing, I think, because actually I don't think we're always meant to sort of remain the same Christian that we were perhaps when we were growing up or in our early adult years. But that can be a good thing. You know, I've often seen that deconstruction and then reconstruction as almost being like the way in which a caterpillar turns from a caterpillar to a butterfly. It looks like everything's gone wrong. It's, you know, been bound up in a cocoon. But actually that process is actually creating something more beautiful and stronger that will come out the other side. And for me, I've met many people who have certainly gone through a difficult testing time with looking at their faith. You could call it deconstruction, but who have been able to build something much stronger and actually deeper as a result of it. I would include myself on that. You know, there have been lots of occasions over the last 20 years when I've met objections and difficulties that have really made me scratch my head and even given me some sleepless nights. But actually I found on the other side of it, even though I don't tend to have the answers to all of these questions, I've realized just how compelling and deep and rich Christianity is at its core, even while mysteries often remain. So I do think there is a healthy form of deconstruction, and it's the kind of deconstruction which takes things apart but seeks to put them back together again in a stronger, healthier way. The type of deconstruction that perhaps is less helpful is the one that pulls things apart but just leaves the pieces scattered on the floor and doesn't attempt to rebuild something, because I think that is where you're willing to perhaps question everything but not open to reinvestigating and kind of putting the pieces back together. And it's always sad when I come across stories of Christians who have sort of, perhaps because of poor teaching when they were growing up, a very one-sided view of certain theological issues, have sort of decided, well, once that, if you like, that card has been taken out of the bottom of my stack of cards, it feels like the whole thing collapses and I can't possibly put it back together again.
Right.
But there are some foundational things, and those are expressed in something like the Apostles' Creed, you know, the, obviously God, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, the ongoing work of the Holy Spirit, the hope of salvation and resurrection for all people. These are, if you like, the core things, okay? There's a lot else that we can agree to disagree on, actually, as Christians. But sometimes I meet too many Christians whose faith is deconstructed because they were sort of inculcated into a faith where, if it's not my very specific interpretation of, say, the first chapters of Genesis, or my very specific interpretation of the book of Revelation or something else, suddenly their faith is so fragile in a sense that it can't stand the questioning or the objections that inevitably come. So for me, it's about building on a firm foundation. And I believe it is always possible with that firm foundation to rebuild that faith into something stronger and deeper than before.
Now, what would you say to your dad, to parents? We talk to many, and we have a lot of parents listening to Family Life today, you know, and we've all tried to raise our sons and daughters in the faith and do everything we can as parents to set them on a course to be Christ followers their whole life. And now they're a teenager or maybe an adult, young man or woman, and they're starting to, in our minds, we think, deconstruct and walk away.
And our fear is that they'll leave all the pieces on the floor.
Yeah. So, you know, talk to the parent who's watching that, and it may be healthy, may not. We don't know yet. We're just watching, but it feels like they're abandoning everything we've spent our lives. We've been on our knees praying to God that they would be men and women as adults walking, and now we're wondering what's happened. How does a parent respond?
It's such a difficult question, and so much of it is so dependent on the children, you know, who are always different. You know, I've got four kids. They're all incredibly different to each other. They've all got their own very different ways of approaching faith, and the approach I take with one may not be the same as another. But what I would say is one of the mistakes I think parents sometimes make from an early point is sort of shielding their children almost from any kind of objections or questions around faith. And even perhaps when they themselves raise questions, sort of pushing those down as though we shouldn't really be questioning our faith. I think that's a huge mistake because it won't take long before inevitably that child does grow up and does inevitably encounter those kinds of things. The best thing that can happen, I think, for a child is to have talked about those issues around the family table, with their parents, with others perhaps who are helpful guides and mentors in this area, at an age when they actually have access to Christians who want to help them on that journey. Once they're, as it were, grown up in the adult world, they're not necessarily going to immediately find those kinds of people around them. In our family, we practice, you know, very much, you know, if we're together, if we're having a conversation and it turns to issues around faith, Christianity, I want to hear, hey, what are your friends at school saying about faith? Why did your friend say they don't believe in God? Tell me, let's have a conversation about it. And let's absolutely get it out on the table and be very honest about the fact that we live in a secular, very often post-Christian culture, and they're going to be hearing these things inevitably as they grow up. Don't try and shield them from it, but do your best to do what 1 Peter 3:15 says, which is always be ready to give an answer to anyone who asks you about the reason for the hope that you have. And that includes your children. Not that you'll have all the answers either, but I think there's a really good example you can set of being open to questions and saying, I want to explore and I want to... That alone, I think, for a child, for a young person, can make them realize, okay, it's not wrong to question or to have doubts. And hopefully will produce something positive when it comes to how they engage those doubts and questions when they do inevitably encounter them. In the end, as I say, there's no magic formula though. And it's one of the best things you can do is still to continue to pray every day for your children, as I do, because they're so different and we can't control, you know, everything about them and the way they encounter faith.
Well, even what you do, Justin, would be a great springboard into great conversations with your kids about this. Tell our audience who don't know what you do, tell them about your show. We've referred to it several times.
Yeah, well, over the years, I've hosted a show called Unbelievable. I actually finished hosting the show actually just about 2 years ago, but for the best part of 20 years, I hosted conversations between Christians and non-Christians. And that's really where the core of this new book comes from, Why I'm Still a Christian, because I sort of deliberately exposed myself to the best arguments from atheists, agnostics, people of other faiths, but also trying to bring on the best Christian representatives opposite them and host and moderate these conversations, as I say, for about 17 and a half years. And it was just a wonderful experience, a learning opportunity for me to be able to see these arguments being debated and discussed in real time. And in the process, sort of working out what I believe and how I would encounter and engage these various conversations and arguments. So obviously it grew over that time. It began just as a radio show in the UK. We were early adopters of podcasting, however. And that was interesting because at that point, a lot of non-Christian listeners started to listen to these conversations. And so I suddenly found myself with an audience, not just of Christians who wanted to hear these conversations, but atheists, agnostics, people of other faiths who were also tuning in via podcast. But what I experienced in the process is that it's okay to open up Christianity to question. It can sometimes be a disconcerting thing to do. It can feel uncomfortable sometimes. But at the same time, there were a lot of Christians in the UK when we started this show who also said, you know, this is a really good thing. It's getting us out of our bubble. We live alongside skeptical neighbors, friends, family members. This helps me to think about how I would have this conversation with someone who doesn't believe. So I think it's had an immense amount of value for the listeners, for me, lots of non-Christian listeners, atheists who started listening. I think it's managed to bring down some of the defenses for them. It's opened them up to the possibility that Christianity may be true. And I have a number of stories of people for whom it was part of their journey to faith.
Wow.
And I continue to have these kinds of conversations in the new shows that I host. And as it happens, I'm just in the process of beginning a brand new show that is very much doing the same thing of bringing Christians and non-Christians together. We're hoping to launch that in the new year. So it's always been a passion of mine because I genuinely think Christianity can stand on its own two feet intellectually. And it's actually an incredibly evangelistic, missional thing to do as well, to invite non-Christians into the conversation and see what God does with it, you know?
I have a couple questions based on that. First one would be, did you ever turn off the mic or the cameras after a show and think, wow, they made a really good point? I'm struggling. I mean, it was made you question your faith.
Absolutely, there were, especially I think in the early years of the show. Mm. And that's probably because I was myself confronting some of these issues for the very first time. I hadn't really thought about them. So I was kind of processing as my guests were doing the debating. I think in later years, because I'd kind of done almost every topic from every different direction possible, I'd kind of done a lot of the thinking and processing for myself by that point. And I was able to more swiftly kind of understand where someone's coming from, what the likely response will be to that, help to shepherd the conversation a bit so that both sides make sure that they're heard and so on. What I always found, though, is whenever I had a real kind of difficult objection that I didn't feel I'd necessarily found the answer to, I usually found in due course, I would stumble upon something or another conversation would help to clear something up. Mm. And I almost always found I was not the first person to encounter this, that there are lots of Christians before who've probably done a great job of attempting to answer these questions. So it's not that everything is answered for me. There are still some things I put in the kind of the mystery, difficult to answer jar. But what I found is that at the same time, atheism, non-belief in God, has just as many difficulties. And the question is, when we're comparing these two worldviews, which makes best sense of the evidence that's available to both of us? And after having these conversations, as I say, for two decades, I am still convinced that Christianity makes best sense of the evidence that's available to all of us. And that's kind of where I stand.
Okay, I love these conversations with Justin.
Yeah, and I think, like I said at the beginning, it's going to really help parents.
I do too.
These are dinner conversations that if your kids aren't asking these questions now because they're too little, they will.
Yeah, and we should be having nice conversations. So I think you're going to love these next couple days, and we'll be back with him tomorrow. You can go to familylifetoday.com and click the link in the show notes to get his book, which is called Why I'm Still a Christian.
And let me just say this. If you need parenting help, and let me tell you, we needed parenting help. Now we need grandparenting help. Every parent needs parenting help. We would love to help you. We have a site just for you, familylife.com/parentinghelp. We put some of our best parenting resources there for you to help you. please go there, get the help we offer. It's familylife.com/parentinghelp.
Family Life Today is a donor-supported ministry of Family Life, a crew ministry, helping you pursue the relationships that matter most.